5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to noticing its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. You know, the look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you bitch. Sir? Gia.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Please visit us at SasquatchChronicles.com for uncut audio, extended shows, and much more. Tonight, we'll be having a roundtable discussion about government cover-ups related to Sasquatch. Our guests tonight are John, who is a retired police officer, Jack, who is a current police officer, and Ken, our insider, from episodes 67 and 68. Hang on, boys and girls, as we go down the rabbit hole.
So, Will, why don't you start off and kind of go through what I'd really like to talk about tonight, guys. One of the, among many, is what's going on with Bob Garrett. And I got a late night phone call, and I can go into all that stuff. Ken knows about it. Will knows about it, but I can go into it. But I'll let you take it away, Will. Do you want to
kind of kick it off? Okay, what I'd like to do with Jack and John is to have you guys, and you both have had Sasquatch encounters, so I kind of like maybe for each of you just to give a little background on you know, what you do or have done professionally, and then tell us your encounter. You want to start with you, John?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm currently a retired police officer here in I worked for an agency here in Fresno County in California, and I worked for about 18 years and did various assignments from detectives to narcotics and other specialty units. My first encounter actually happened when I was about 8 years old. We used to, my dad always used to take us up to the mountains here, just east of us in the Sierras, to cut firewood. And we'd gone up several times before, and, you know, when we camp out, my dad never liked to camp near people. He always liked to kind of stay away from other people, so we avoided a lot of the campgrounds altogether. So we would kind of drive back down some logging roads, find a good spot to set up our camp there, and then my dad would go out and look for firewood or cut down trees that we could cut up the next day and take back with us. Well, on this occasion that we went up, I was with my dad and brother, and we'd gone back. We'd actually camped in the spot before down this logging road. And when we got there, we kind of dropped off all of our gear, and my dad wanted to go out and look for some trees to cut there. So all three of us kind of took off down the logging road, and we looked around. Dad found a good tree to cut up for the next day. Well, he sent me back to the camper and wanted me to start setting up while him and my brother figured out how they were going to cut this tree up. So I wandered back down the logging road. As I got back towards camp, I kind of got that feeling that something just wasn't right, which could be anything when you're out in the forest there, especially being 8 years old, even though I'd gone up numerous times before. So I proceeded to set up the camp there, and after I got most of it done, I was just kind of relaxing, and where we'd set up camp was kind of in a meadow area, probably, I would say it was probably maybe 30 by 30 yards there, each direction. Wasn't too big of a meadow area. So we had a tree line on the east side of this meadow area. Well, as I was sitting down there relaxing, I heard something off into the tree line behind me just to the east. And I thought at the time it might have been my brother that was trying to, that he'd cut back through the forest area there and was going to try and scare me. So I got up from my seat and I kind of made my way towards the tree line there. And just as you get to this tree line, there's also was a lot of manzanita and a few other bushes in there with the pine trees. And as I made my way to the tree line, I looked through and I didn't see my brother, but what kind of caught my eye was, as I scanned through a small clearing between these manzanita bushes, I could see what appeared to be the back end of a bear. And that's what I initially thought it was. So I kind of, and it was probably about, I would say between 40 and 50 yards from me. So I was kind of watching it, and it's the first time I thought, hey, you know, I was seeing a bear in the wild. I'd seen him before, but not that close. And so I just kind of froze and was watching it. Well, all of a sudden, what I thought was a bear stood up. And when it stood up, of course, it cleared the height of this manzanita bush that was kind of blocking the view of the other half of it. And that's when I kind of figured out it wasn't a bear that I was looking at. And it put its right hand, it had its right hand against on the tree there, where the tree was covering about the kind of the right half of its body, but its right arm was out holding on to the side of the tree, and its left arm was down close to its knee. Well, the one thing I noticed when it stood up, it didn't stand up fully straight. When it stood up, it was kind of, I guess, slouched over. And as I noticed the hand there on the tree, I noticed its left hand was making a movement, kind of, it was close to its knee, but it was swinging in a kind of left to right motion as it held onto this tree. Well, when I'd first seen this, of course, when I initially froze, when I thought it was a bear, and when it stood up, now I really couldn't move because I didn't know what I was looking at. I didn't know that whatever these things were had been up in, of course, the Sierras there where I had been cutting wood with my dad. But the only thing that I could compare it to was it had very ape-like features to it. And as I froze when I stared at this, I finally was able to turn around and run back to camp. And when I got back to camp, I tried to explain it to my father, who kind of brushed it off and said, well, it was probably a bear what I saw. Well, of course, I explained to him, I know the difference between, you know, a bear and a gorilla. And this looked more and resembled more of a gorilla, plus it was standing on two legs. I want to say he believed me a little bit in a way, but he didn't really, after this encounter, he really didn't talk about it too much with me. And after that, it took me a good, 2-3 years before I would go back out into the forest with my dad. And I would never go back out overnight. And
right.
I would kind of, my dad would, you know, and I would tell him, no, I don't want to spend the night. And he'd kind of laugh about it, you know, make remarks about, well, maybe we'd see that, you know, the gorilla that you saw. And that was kind of, that was my first encounter.
Let me do this, John. I don't mean to interrupt you, but we only have Ken for a short time, so we'll continue with that afterwards, okay?
Yeah.
Wes, did you want to go ahead and start, kind of give the outline of what happened to Bob Garrett? And then we'll go into the discussion on that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing about that, John. I want to come back. I have some questions for you on that. That's a great encounter.
Yeah.
Most people know Jack's encounter. He's been on the show before. He was the police officer that was describing the gorilla yanking the kid off the bike. And then everyone obviously knows Ken as our insider. I got a phone call the other night from Bob Garrett. And I don't know, John, if you're familiar with him. Jack, I think you're familiar with Bob. I think
you've
spoken to him before.
I've talked to Bob several times.
So what happened to... Basically, what happened to Bob Garrett is he's been a quote-unquote researcher for a long time. And, you know, besides Will, there's not... I can't think of anyone else right off the bat that would have as much information on these creatures. You know, Bob would be, you know, right there with Will. I mean, these guys just know a lot. And Bob constantly goes out into the field. But he's down there in Texas. He's down towards the what they call the Big Thicket area, East Texas. And what happened is, make a long story really, really short, there's a lot more to the story, but the baseline of the story, he came across what he called a torn up camp, and he filmed it. Now, what he had filmed, there was a lot of things he had to take out of the original before, so that he could post it as part of an agreement. Basically, what happened is him and another gentleman, they came across this camp. The camp itself looked like King Kong went through and destroyed it. The tent was all messed up. There was blood. There was huge tracks, trees that were just snapped in half. I mean, just kind of a horrific scene that he came across. Well, the first thing he did is he called 911. They never came out. So he decided to film it. He was walking around. He started filming everything that he had seen. Make a long story really, really short. The feds tried to throw Bob in prison over this film because he had posted it on YouTube. And they were trying to nail Bob with, you know, he was, what's it called when you get between a police officer and an investigation? What's the term that they use? He was interfering with the investigation. He filmed a crime scene. He had disturbed a crime scene. I mean, one thing after another, after another, after another, they were trying to nail him with. And Bob had to end up getting an attorney, and they fought it. And he kind of won. There was some agreement that he would never speak about certain things that he saw. There were certain things, parts of the story that he would never discuss. They let him have his YouTube channel back. But what you see on YouTube wasn't the full uncut, what he originally put up on YouTube. So he's been having a lot of, and I've talked to Bob before in the past, and he's told me, hey, you know what? We get harassed every time we go out. And I go, well, what do you mean you get harassed? And he said, what's the, and this is long before Ken came along. He said, the feds are constantly harassing us. We'll set up our cameras, and they'll roll up almost over the top of our fire in their SUVs. It's either the DNR or it's, you know, somebody in law enforcement, handcuff everyone, walk around, take all the SD cards out of the cameras, question everyone for about 2 hours, and then let them go. And it's just, it happens over and over and over and over again with these guys. They just constantly are being harassed when they go out. So we did a show the other night, last week, about, it was episode 68, where we talked about the torn up camp, and we talked about communication that was going on between different government agencies, specifically relating to Bob. and it's up on our website, but we went into a lot of details about what actually happened kind of behind the scenes with Bob and that torn up camp and what actually really happened, which I knew most of the story. I didn't know all of it, but I knew most of the kind of what happened. You know, trying to get it out of Bob is, you know, you'd have a better chance waterboarding, you know, a terrorist and getting information out of him than you would trying to get something out of Bob. But so Bob's been really tight-lipped. Well, after that show aired, I got a frantic call from Bob and Tim Sermon. And it's probably the first time I've ever heard Bob rattled. I mean, he's usually like cool hand Luke. Like I just have never seen Bob rattled ever. Whenever I've ever talked to him in the past. And what he told me was, and Tim backed this up, their YouTube channel's gone, disappeared. It's like his YouTube channel never existed. So he has no access to his YouTube channel. His Facebook account was deleted. That's gone. And he's trying to contact Facebook, and it's almost like his Facebook account never existed. I believe his website was gone for a few days. I think it's back up, but his website was gone for a couple days, like it never existed. And then Bob was starting to get random text messages from, I think it was like 111111. It was all ones. And he started getting these random text messages saying, "Remember the torn up camp? Should have been you." It's obviously a threat, but he's getting like random text messages. And the part that's disturbing is when I talked to Bob, Bob said that this isn't the first time they've done this. This isn't his first rodeo with this. After he did the torn up camp, same thing happened. His YouTube channel all of a sudden no longer existed. All his videos are gone. I think his website came back up, but all the videos, everything, any real information on there is gone. His Facebook's gone. And he was telling me that this isn't the first time. After he filmed the torn up camp, they pulled the same crap on him. He's getting random text messages. His wife's being pulled over for no reason. Basically, anytime she leaves the house, she's now getting pulled over.
Didn't you say they got into his computer too and opened all his files?
Yeah, that was the other thing. Is he was saying, "Oh, he's locked out of Blog Talk." He has a radio show he does on Sunday nights called The Big Thicket Watch, and they locked him out of Blog Talk. And Blog Tech can't figure out what happened. It's like someone went in and just, with regard to his password, they said it looks like someone changed it halfway through, and then almost like they decided not to do it, but somehow it took effect. So Blog Talk's having trouble even unlocking his account, so he can't even really get into Blog Talk at this point. And he was saying when he's on his computer, he'll be sitting there, and sometimes the cursor will move on its own. I mean, this sounds like crazy talk, and if it was coming from anyone else besides Bob Garrett, I'd probably question it a lot more. But here I have Tim and I have Bob, and you know, and I completely respect these guys, and they're saying all these things. And his Facebook, all the things he said is true. All that stuff is gone. And you know, I think Bob kind of prides himself on his YouTube and you know, his different social media outlets. I don't see him just wiping those out. I mean, this guy sounded really rattled. He was saying in his chat room, there's a, and I won't say the person's name. Will and I know her, Bob knows her, but her name, you know, it'll be like first name, last name, and then the number 40. And in his chat room, there was like 25 of them that showed up under the same name, and they were all commenting. It was like first name, last name, 41, first name, last name, 42, 43, 44, 45. And they were all just making a mess of, I mean, this sounds like crazy talk. I realize this sounds like crazy talk. I get it. But what I'm saying is...
No, don't, Wes. And I can probably explain it a little bit. The military did operations concerning computer software. The T-Rex program can break into anybody's computer. It can scan anybody's hard drive. All they need is an IP address, and they'll go right to that one computer. The military's been doing this for the past 10 years.
Part of what Wes and I had talked about was the capabilities, and different people at different levels have different capabilities. you know, like local law enforcement has certain capabilities. The federal government, if they want in, they'll get in, and they'll get in fast. That'll piss some of these website companies off because they pride themselves on security and not being able to get into accounts to delete an entry out of some of these different companies, you know, like Facebook and Google and stuff like that is a very difficult thing to do because of the failover, where they store the information, how many different servers it on. It just doesn't happen easily. I think the funny thing about this is that I think anybody that ever has seen Bob's video, they understand how serious it was. And when you think about what took place at that site and the fact this guy was basically being a good Samaritan, you know, we talked about some of the laws that were quoted to protect Bob were basically good Samaritan laws. This guy did what any decent person would do, is they would go in, see if the person needed assistance. The fact that he videotaped it is actually better for law enforcement because since it took them 16 hours to respond to the site, or almost 16 hours, local law enforcement was a little pissed off the fact that these people didn't want to go out there when it was dark. Think about that. Cops didn't want, or not the cops, whatever federal agency was going to respond, did not respond till it was well after daylight. What does that tell you?
Yeah, they definitely didn't want to get involved in that.
And anyone that looks at that video can see that whatever tore up that brush, having seen the brush torn up firsthand myself, that didn't get done by a pickup truck driving over the campfire or any of the other crazy crap that was used to try to cover that up. Bob Garrett did what any decent Christian human being would do, is go out, see if he could render assistance, and this is the response he gets. But part of the stuff about this that is amazing to me is that video is everywhere. Other people have it posted. They haven't done anything but try to harass a guy that I don't think is one I would want to harass. You know, if this guy's got the guts to stand toe-to-toe with monsters like this, Wes is a little more polite by calling them creatures. I don't look at them that way. And this guy goes out and does this all the time with just a few people. Takes guts.
2% of my audience are flute players, so I try to be sensitive to their...
Well, you're more sensitive than me. It's just the stuff that I keep seeing is... And Wes, Will, you know how I feel, and I'm sorry both of you guys are law enforcement, but I didn't have good luck with the law enforcement where I live. And
trust me, my citizens in the town I serve feel the same way. They've gotten to the point like, what the hell are we paying you for?
What are you telling us, Jack?
Well, not to change the subject, but have any of y'all else heard that beat?
Yes.
We're being taped.
I haven't heard it. Tap.
That beeping sound, that's a tap. That a tap does that.
I don't hear a beep.
So, I haven't heard it for a while.
I haven't heard it for the last 5 minutes, but we've been tapped.
I heard it back at the beginning, but, you know, I can tell you just, I don't have a lot of time, but I can tell you that, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing good work like Bob. And for you two to come forward and talk about this is amazing because the law enforcement where I lived would not spend, as I stated, they wouldn't even leave their car. They would light up the entire area. They would hear this ruckus and this noise off in the distance, which clearly wasn't a person. And they had shotguns, they had M4s, they had, you know, their sidearms.
Trust me, that ain't enough. You almost need a damn M1 tank.
I know exactly what you mean. I've been face to face. And I can tell you that to allow people
to go into forested areas or wherever they may be and not give them proper warning of what's out there, to me,
that's almost criminal in itself.
Yeah.
And you can ask Will. Me and him's talked about this several times, and that is the one thing that I had stressed in my encounters with the feds, is look, I've got citizens I serve here.
Yeah.
If there's a danger in a credible threat, they need to know.
Jack, did you want to talk about that encounter?
Which one do you want to talk about?
How it first began and where it went with the feds.
Okay. It started out as I was working on my MDT on a report, and I was pulled off the side of the road and heard three whoops. And at first I was thinking, nah, it can't be. And, you know, like 5 minutes later, I hear three more whoops further down this orchard where I was pulled up next to. Well, I didn't think much of it, you know, and I believe I even emailed you about that, Will. And then within probably 2 weeks of that, I was eating lunch with an ACO, an animal control officer, and she was telling me about a call that she went out on where there, you know, suspected dogfight. She shows up to this abandoned trailer in this, you know, basically abandoned lot, and there's 15 or 20 pit bulls tore up. And I don't mean just tore up. I mean like their lower jaw was ripped from their skull. Limbs were missing.
Can I ask you, how long ago did this take place, roughly?
Like 3 months ago.
This is what I was talking about. Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
So anyways, and then as I was, you know, kind of trying to get a hold of the ACO, I wanted to hear more about this story. Her supervisor got nasty about it. I went to dispatch. Dispatch said they had no 911 call, but I remember the animal control officer telling me she talked to a neighbor. So, you know, it was within my what we call an ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction. And I started combing through there and found exactly who she was talking about. You know, I said, hell yeah, there was a dogfight there. And the next thing I know, when animal control shows up, there's like 30 friggin' fed cars there. Everybody from ATF to FBI, DEA, BLM, and, you know, other three-letter acronyms that are floating around in law enforcement. And that's not unusual where we're at, because this where I'm located is a big drug corridor. So it's not unusual to have ATF or DEA and FBI show up to a dogfight. Next thing I know, feds show up at my office. Well, I get called out on a possible burglary, show up, and it was an older couple in their 80s. The old man said him and his wife were laying in bed. It was like midnight. All of a sudden, they hear a crash, and he went out in the kitchen where he heard the crash. There's a rock laying on the floor, and the window in the kitchen was busted. So, you know, he's turning on the lights, and he walks out the front door. And he makes it about 5 or 10 steps out the front door, and just right off the porch, this damn thing's looking at him, and takes a swipe at it. And he just kind of turned to his right, and there it was. Didn't get him, just took a swipe at him. And then it just kind of stood there, looked at him, and turned around and walked off back across the road. Well, then that progressed to when I started filing my report. These quote-unquote feds show up, not telling us what agency they're with. Two guys, one was real super clean cut, had on 5'11 trousers, nice polo shirt. It's on a Sunday. The other guy, I don't want to say he looked like a biker. He was a little bit more unkempt. Had a beard, just a basic, you know, ratty old button-down shirt. Well, he was a jerk about the whole mess. You didn't see that. That ain't what you took. That ain't your report. The other guy's like, no, we understand, you know, playing good cop, bad cop. And I'm like, you know, wait a minute. Time out. We're supposed to be autonomous from you.
Now, what agency are you with? And it's right there with me and my boss, my chief. And it quickly got to the point where, you know, I told the gruff guy, look, I'll whip your ass behind this building. I don't give a shit. You know, you're not going to come in here and tell me how I'm going to run my business in my town. Needless to say, I got suspended for 2 weeks. Then I had a friend. He's a fellow. He's not a fellow officer. He's a deputy in the county that I'm in. He takes a report of a 15-year-old boy getting thrown off his bike, and apparently a kid thought he was being followed. In the area where the kid was, there's not a lot of street lights. The only place they have street lights is, you know, at you know, like curbs in the road, where there's a big major intersection, there'll be a street light. Well, he stopped right there at the street light, turned around and looked, and there's a damn gorilla on all fours looking at him, or at least what he thought was a gorilla. And then it dawned on him, I'm not looking at a gorilla. And the damn thing started flipping its lip up at him, baring its teeth. Well, the kid kind of freaked out. He starts taking off. Well, the damn thing grabs the bike, throws him off the bike. Kid didn't miss a beat, jumped to his feet, ran home, scared to death. Well, my buddy, the deputy, takes his report, gets the kid in the car. They go looking. He said, well, show me where it was. And the kid takes him to the spot. And they get to that area, and lo and behold, right next to the road, there's a salt cedar, and there's his bike 10 feet in the air, hanging on a limb. So, you know, I'd asked Miguel, I said, what'd you find? Did you find anything significant, hair, anything like that? And he said, well, there's some blood on the back, but, you know, he said, I can't justify taking a swab of it, sending it in for a DNA test. There's no violent crime here. And I said, I understand that. Well, later that week, we go out to the same area, and we're doing about 5 miles an hour. We get to the spot where that kid was, and we have the takedown lights on, and I'm looking, and I see eye shine. Well, then I said, you know, Miguel, go ahead and hit the spotlight. Let's see what we can see. Well, that's when we've seen about 8 sets of eyes looking at us at various heights, but everything was above 6 feet tall. Then we got roared at. And I think that was the night that I was, you know, texting you, and Miguel had a...
Right, as it was happening.
What happened about 5 or 6 weeks ago that was pretty significant?
I got called out on a prowler call, made my turn around the corner, and there it was. It was looking at me. It was about 10 feet away. My got a tack light on my sidearm, and my tack light hit it right mid-drift, and I started going up. And as soon as that light hit its face, that's when it threw an 18-inch by 4-inch log at me and just barely missed my head. And he wasn't
Jack,
happy
tell
to
us
see
about,
me.
Tell us back up a little bit. It's important about what happened after the night that you and the deputy had your encounter.
Well, that's when I got suspended that next day, because I got called in to the office, and that's when they showed up and got really super nasty, and I got suspended for 2 weeks. My boss was concerned we were going to lose our federal grants, and we don't have many. And we're in a small municipality, so, you know, we have to depend on our federal grants. My boss had an encounter. Was driving down the same road, damn near hit one. And later on, it was like 10 days later, he calls me up and he said, I'll never doubt your word again. I said, what do you mean? He said, you were talking crazy. At least I thought you were talking crazy. And these guys about had me convinced.
You know, what was fascinating, though, is to that encounter, when they came to your office, they were present when you and the deputy had your encounter, because they had tape and audio. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, they showed me, you could see a faint outline behind my unit of that creature when it roared at us. And it wasn't very far behind my patrol unit, and seeing me take off. And I mean, a clear picture of my face. And that was the wild thing. It actually picked up on the audio. Oh shit, he's right behind you. And, you know, tearing ass out of there. It got really I mean, really interesting and a little surreal when they started showing that stuff to my boss, and about had my boss convinced I was crazy.
I'm sorry I took it in a different direction there. I just had the ability to look into some of that about 5.5 or 6 weeks ago. I just wanted to confirm it was the same thing, which you just did. And I appreciate that. But unfortunately, gentlemen, I got to step off. But wow. How close was it to you when you were at your car there?
It was probably at the most 10 feet behind my car.
And they had pictures of all of this.
You couldn't see any detail of I'm taking it, it was an alpha that roared at us. You couldn't see detail. You could see hair, and you could see a big outline, but you couldn't see detail.
What information, Ken, did you get on that incident?
Pretty much the same thing, that there was a bunch of, we'll just say communications taking place. Not a lot about specifics. Just kind of date and times, kind of like the same thing with some of the other cases. But when I talk to you, Will, I just, I don't get everything in real time. I get it shown kind of afterwards. But a lot of the same, well, I got to be very careful about what I say now after what happened above, Garrett. But that there was the problem, that they keep quoting the problem, and that they were having ongoing issues, and they stated the location. I just saw that the last one was like 5 or 6 weeks ago, and when we had spoken about it first time, it was last week, which was, I said 4 or 5 weeks back at that time. I just wanted to confirm, because a lot of the stuff that they talk about isn't like you would think. It's more or less that they're monitoring the situation, that cover story type stuff, what they're going to do to correct the problem. I just can't believe that they were there at the same time that you guys were.
You had talked to them quite a bit after that. So tell us what that interaction was.
They made contact after, as a matter of fact, as soon as I made contact with the creature, heard noise behind me. I was thinking, oh shit, I walked into an ambush. I kind of stepped to my right. Well, as I turned and looked, that creature was hauling butt back into the wood line. Kind of boogered me. I just kind of stood there, didn't know what to do. And then the Grizzly Adams biker dude shows up, and he's looking at me, and he said, couldn't shoot, could you? I'm like, no. And he just kind of put his hand on me and said, good man, and went after him. But I could tell that there was more into the wood line, because I could hear it.
And now these guys definitely softened up their approach to you after those initial couple of encounters, right?
Yes. Well, actually, I'd seen them. They were running code in through our town without running with lights. And I pulled them over, and that kind of pissed them off. And I went ahead and I said, open up the back door. And they opened up the back door, and I got in. I said, look, I can help you. Don't treat me like some redheaded, dumb stepchild. Let me help you. And I think that kind of eased things, the tension between us. And then after that encounter on Thanksgiving morning, they showed up to my office again the last time, threw a packet on my desk, and I went through that packet, basically offered me a job, to the extent of, hey, look, we'll bring you on. But you need to know all of this, and it dates back to 1968 when they actually started, or 65 when they started taking this super seriously. They brought back a Rock 8. I can remember that document showing a Rock 8 from Saigon to, I want to say Howard Air Force Base, but it's not Howard. It's Hickam out of Honolulu.
Right.
And it went to Wake Island, of all places, or no, Johnson Island. Went to Johnson Island. Well, Johnson Island's where the U.S. Army stores all its chemical weapons. And there was another incident where they, I remember looking at this document where they talked about killing one in the Smoky Mountain Range. Apparently, a group of them had gotten to be quite the a formidable force within the wood line. People were getting not just harassed, but people were getting hurt. And they sent in some group operators to take care of it. And a team no less of, I know from my own personal experience talking with a friend of mine that actually went after one, they're not going to go in with anything less than 12 guys.
That's normally double the size of a regular special forces team, right?
Exactly. You know, it's you usually got six guys on a combat team. No, they send in double that.
Let me ask you something real quick. Now, up until this time, these guys really didn't identify what agency where they were from, right?
No, not until after they had thrown that packet on my desk, and then I found out who they worked for. They worked for the Department of the Interiors.
Right, and before that, you had actually photographed the back of their SUV and ran the plates, right?
Yep, and that came back as DHS, Department of Homeland Security.
Now, you had also said, too, it was it shortly after that incident you said you got suspended?
Yeah, after
now,
that
what,
one where they roared at me. Yeah, I got suspended on that.
If you don't mind me asking, what was the reason behind the whole suspension with that? Did it have to do with something they said? Or
no, it was the way I took it was it basically I was interfering with their investigation. Is what they told my boss, and that was the reason my boss gave me was, hey, look, let me sort this out. Just go on, and you know, just take.
But isn't that your jurisdiction?
Yeah, exactly.
You have primary.
I'm supposed to have primary control
that, right?
And custody of that. Yeah, that's my jurisdiction. That's
right.
My primary patrol area. So it got, like I said, it got surreal. I couldn't believe it. As a matter of fact, after it happened, I didn't I call you and tell you what happened, or at least I emailed you. I know
right.
that.
Yeah, we talked about
and,
it.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I can't believe this crap. To this day, I still can't, but it makes more sense the more I'm getting to see how these guys operate. They work for the Department of the Interior. They're almost autonomous from any other law enforcement division. And they work without impunity, which is a scary thing. They answer to one group of people. Now, what group of people that is, I'm not sure. But they answer to one group of people. And I found out that they have teams that go out, and they actually monitor their movement. If there's a problem, then they start addressing that issue.
Poor John. John's probably like, hey, I was just here to share a childhood encounter. Like, what kind of show is this?
No, yeah, what did I get into?
Yeah, he's like, what's going on here, guys?
No, and
we'll get back to your encounter, John. Thanks for staying with us. I mean, to anyone else, if I wasn't in the position I'm in, and I'm pretty sure Will could say the same thing, Jack could say the same thing. If you're not part of these internal conversations, this all seems like crazy talk. That's what I would think if I was listening to it. I think these guys are crazy. But what's funny is that I know in episode 68, when we were talking about the conversations back and forth, and Ken kind of alluded to it, but it was coming from someone in Washington State in the Department of the Interior talking to his counterpart in Texas. Ken had mentioned the 16-hour time frame it took for them to respond. And it was like an argument they were having back and forth, but the emails were coming from the Department of the Interior. Obviously, everything's encrypted, but and I don't want to go into how we know that, but it's amazing. It's coming from, it almost seemed like someone in Washington State was kind of running the show for someone down in Texas, and it was all the Department of the Interior. Just kind of a side note, I know you had mentioned that, Jack, about the Department of Interior, but it's like all these emails, it was either going to Bureau of Land Management advising them what to do, it was going to the Forestry Department advising them what to do, and it all is coming from the Department of the Interior.
And the Department of Agriculture is involved in this too.
Well, and the problem is that, like, Forestry Service, DLM, federal game, fishing game. What else? To some degree, the agricultural department all fall under the Department of the Interior. And that's what's wild. So the direct line is from A to B to C to Department of the Interior. And a lot of these other departments, like DOD, DOJ, Department of the Interior, all have to, at some aspect, answer to Department of Homeland Security.
I want to ask you real quick about the conversation that you had with these gentlemen, if you'll go into it. Kind of how the conversation was with these guys. What did they seem to want from you? What did they... can you talk a little bit about your conversation? Because we've had a lot of previous guests, actually a lot of police officers, believe it or not, and a lot of police officers in the past have said they've come across these guys, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone have in-depth conversations like you have with these guys.
I don't think a lot of police officers, well, like that one cap from Missouri, I don't think he really realized who he was dealing with until it was too late. And then
absolutely.
He lost his job. I was fortunate enough, and still am fortunate enough, I've got a boss that is very supportive of me, former military himself, and he's about as hard-nosed as I am when it comes to somebody coming up telling him what to do. It kind of pisses him off like it did me. And then when he had his own experience, he's like, okay, you're not nuts. Something's going on. The whole gist of the original conversation was, you need to stop what you're doing. That isn't what you saw. Well, then it progressed to, after I've taken their picture, stopped them, approached them saying, hey, look, you know, why are you running code and not running with lights? Well, we were in a hurry. Yeah, you're supposed to use your lights. You know, why don't you just open the back door and let's have a talk? And that gist of that conversation was, hey, look, let me help you. Well, you know, you're not briefed into this. Your security clearance has been outdated.
Let's back up real quick so most people don't understand. You pulled these guys over, which takes a huge set of balls.
They were speeding through his town.
They're speeding through your town. I don't always have a lot of brains.
Right. So for people for people listening who understand who didn't quite catch that. Jack pulled these guys over for speeding. I can barely get it out without laughing. You pulled these guys over for speeding. Go ahead.
Yeah, they were running code through town, but they weren't using lights. And they were doing, if I remember right, it was like 93 in a 55. And where we're at, that's perfectly legal as long as you run with lights. You can do that if you're, you know, running with lights, what we call running code. They weren't running code. I pulled them over. Yeah, screw them. What the hell are they going to do? They can't fire me. They can just persuade my boss to fire me, and he's going to back me up on this one. So, you know, that's when I said, you know, hey, look, open the back door. Let's talk about this. And, you know, that whole gist of that conversation was, is let me help you. Let me, you know, look, you know, I'm here all the time. I know the area. Let me help you. Well, you're not briefed into this. And your security clearance has long since been outdated. And that's true. That's absolutely true. I'm like, look, you can brief me right now. Well, what was spooky was they opened up, they had an onboard computer, you know, mobile data terminal. They opened it up and they started pushing buttons. Next thing I know, they had my file from the military, which was spooky. I'm like, how the hell did you get that? And they started rattling off, you know, well, you were at this operation in 2003, and you were part of this operation in 2004. And what about this in 1990, October 93? I'm like, yeah, what about that? Well, says here, you lived through a near ambush. That's true. I did. Thought one of my best friends took a round in the face, thought it blew his brains out. Well, you know, we'd have to get approval on this one, and we're not going to do that. And you've caused enough trouble as it is. I'm like, all right, well, your choice. I'm going to let you go because you're, quote unquote, supposedly fellow law enforcement. I'm not going to write this up. But just think about what I offered. Well, then it progressed to when I had my encounter with on the Prowler call, and
And, you know, Grizzly Adams shows up and, you know, basically said, you couldn't shoot him, could you? And I'm like, no, I couldn't. And the spooky thing was, that here's the God's honest truth about it. The one thing that ran through my mind was, besides the fact that he looked way too human, what am I going to do if there's more than one around and I kill this thing? Because at this point, it's just me. I got no backup. So, you know, that was my thought process on that night.
When did they talk to you next?
That was that following Friday night. So, they, you know, that happened on Thanksgiving morning. I was back to work Friday night.
What went on during that conversation?
That's when they threw the packet on my desk and started telling me about, well, we're going to offer you a job. You know, we're prepared to offer you a position with us. Explain how the teams worked. All the teams have an anthropologist. All the teams have a primatologist. All the teams have a wildlife biologist attached to it. There are hunter-killer teams that they employ, but they are members of the United States military, and they're only used when they're absolutely needed. They don't explain how it all started, the inception of what had happened. Apparently, it all goes back to even the Patty film, where they couldn't even, the problem that they couldn't get a hold of the Patty film was because Bob Gimlin and Roger Patterson had already left the area before they had a chance to get there.
I might add on that one, there was a gentleman who worked for the Forest Service who happened to show up there the very next morning and took photographs. And I always wondered how he knew where that film site was. It's not very easy to locate. And yet he shows up there the very next morning.
The exact spot. That's
exactly.
Spooky. He knew exactly where it was. So, and it's, you know, me and you talked about this. They're doing exactly what we had done. And what you've been doing for years, you know, they're tracking their migration patterns. They don't particularly per se migrate, but they definitely have a nomadic lifestyle. Where
absolutely.
They, you know, that they'll go from feeding ground to feeding ground to feeding ground.
Right, it's not migratory. It's within their range how they move.
Yeah, and well, you know, and I was talking with Eric Garcia, and right now in the Four Corners region, they're having a real problem with that. They have a breeding population that has decided to stay, and that's a real issue. Because people are starting to come up missing. People have actually had their houses busted into. And my advice to Eric was, hey, look, you know, I'd be telling Brenda I wouldn't be going out unarmed. I don't care what the tribal elders say. You know what? You need to go out and you need to go out armed. And don't putz around with these things.
I wanted to ask you, do you feel like the information they gave you was legitimate information, or did you feel like you were kind of held on a shoestring to kind of keep you either A, to get information?
This is my thought process, because at first I said, you know, I got to think about this, guys. You know, and I kind of like being a small town cop, and I'm you know, right now, if you want an answer right this minute, I'm going to have to tell you, no, I like what I do. I said, but my personal belief is, if you're withholding information of about a dangerous, possible life-threatening animal that is within my city boundaries or within my extraterritorial jurisdiction that will put my citizens in danger, I am duty-bound to tell them. They need to know this. Well, you know, we can't do that. You know, it's you know, we got some other mandates that we have to abide by, and you just can't do that. I think what they were doing was either they were scoping me out for information, or they wanted to find out how serious I was about this whole subject.
And on a side note, now they mentioned they listened to this show. Is that correct?
All the time. All the time. They said, yeah, we listened to William Jevning and Wes Gerber all the time. I'm like, wow, okay.
You know, it's funny.
And we know when you've been on.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. My first questions to them would have been, what's the salary and what's the retirement package? But I guess I'm going to hell, so.
No, I asked them that. I said, what are you offering? And they said, we'll start you out as a GS level 7 or 9. I can't remember which. And me and Will had talked about it. So, you know, it's not peanuts. It's actually pretty decent money. But apparently Mr. Black's like, dude, they should have offered you a GS level 12.
Yeah, he said they should have made you a much better offer than that if they were serious.
Yeah, and that was my whole point was, I think they were just kind of scoping me out for information. They wanted to find out exactly how serious I was.
Well, that's the funny part, is that you can tell when you're talking to a good man and he starts saying, well, what about the safety of the people? Then you can tell when you're talking to someone like me. And I've been like, how much does it pay? And what's the retirement?
John,
well,
what do you
think
about
what the retirement is. I already know what the retirement is. I'm not stupid. Hell, I worked for the federal government for 25 years. I know what the retirement is.
Let's get John's input. What do you think, John?
Well, one of the things that bothers me is that local law enforcement seems to be standing down in some ways to these guys. And like, you know, Jack was saying there that, you know, pulling them over there in the city because they were speeding through was perfectly legit. You know, you get a lot of guys in unmarked cars or parole agents that you don't know they're law enforcement or related there until you actually pull them over and they identify themselves. You know, in your jurisdiction, if you're out there handling the calls that one of the bosses or whoever with that jurisdiction should be kind of maybe stepping up and saying, hey, these guys are, you know, they're interfering with my law enforcement here in this town. If you guys want to come in and police this town, by all means, go ahead. But they need to be more forthcoming with, you know, the chiefs of, it really doesn't matter which, whatever department they're in there. But, you know, suspending guys, you know, for doing their job there, there's going to be some backlash. You know, of lawsuits or, you know, of other personal type inquiries.
Yeah, it makes me wonder with these feds coming in and just kind of stepping on everybody's toes and some degree, with especially with like cases like Bob Garrett, you know, downright violations of civil rights and things. I mean, I can see some real problems with this.
Right. And now you said earlier that his wife was also, she was getting harassment from local law enforcement where they live.
Yeah. What was basically happening is she was getting pulled over for no reason. Anytime she left the house, she would be pulled over. They would kind of harass her. Where are you going to? Where are you coming from? Just, you know, and she'd be like, well, why are you guys pulling me over? And they never really would give her an answer. It was and it was going on constantly. And that's the other thing is that's what bothered Bob more than them harassing him when he goes out on these, you know, different. I'll tell you a little bit more about it, John. It goes even farther than that. Like,
I don't mean to interrupt. I got an emergency call I got to go attend to. It's a 911 hang up I got to go to. I apologize. Okay. I got to bow out. Y'all have a great rest of the evening. I'm going to have to follow up on this on the radio later on, okay?
All right, sounds good, Jack.
All right, thanks, man. Y'all take care.
We recorded the show last night. The 911 call Jack was sent out to was to an abandoned house. Hang on for the next episode as we continue this conversation. Again, please visit us at SasquatchChronicles.com. Have a great night, everyone.
sky.